the 9th of April. Up and to the office a while, none of my fellow officers coming to sit, it being holiday, and so towards noon I to the exchange, and there do hear mighty cries for peace, and that otherwise we shall be undone, and yet do suspect the badness of the peace we shall make. Several do complain of abundance of land flung up by tenants out of their hands, for want of ability to pay their rents, and by name that the Duke of Buckingham hath £6,000 so flung up, and my father writes that Jasper Trice, upon this pretence of his tenants dealing with him, is broke up housekeeping and gone to board with his brother Naylor at Offord, which is very sad. So home to dinner, and after dinner I took coach and to the King's House, and by and by comes after me my wife, with Will Hewer and his mother and Barker, and there we saw The Taming of a Shrew, which hath some very good pieces in it, but generally is but a mean play, and the best part, Sawney, done by Lacey, hath not half its life, by reason of the words, I suppose, not being understood, at least by me. After the play was done, as I came, so I went away, alone, and had a mind to have taken out Nip to have taken the air with her, and to that end sent a porter into her, that she should take a coach, and come to me to the piazza in Covent Garden, where I waited for her, but was doubtful I might have done ill in doing it if we should be visto ensemble. Said Ella was gone out, and so I was eased of that care, and therefore away to Westminster to the Swan, and there did besar la little Mosa, and hacer tocar mi thing, through mi chemise, con su mano, at which she was enojado, but I did donar ella algo, and so all well, and drank. And then by water to the Old Swan, and there found Betty Mitchell sitting at the door. It being darkish, I stayed and talked a little with her, but no osé besarla, though she was to my thinking at this time una de las plus pretty mujeres that ever I did ver in my vida. And God forgive me, my mind did run sobra ella all the vespre, and night, and la day suivante. So home, and to the office a little, and then to Sir William Batten's, where he tells me how he hath found his lady's jewels again, which have been so long lost, and a servant imprisoned and arraigned, and they were in her closet under a china cup, where he hath servants will swear they did look in searching the house. But Mistress Turner and I and others do believe that they were only disposed of by my lady, in case she had died, to some friends of hers, and now laid there again. So home to supper, and to read the book I bought yesterday of the Turkish policy, which is a good book, well writ, and so owned by Dr. Clark yesterday to me, commending it mightily to me for my reading as the only book of that subject that ever was writ, yet so designedly. So to bed. The 10th of April. Up, and to my office a little, and then in the garden find Sir William Penn, and he and I to Sir William Batten, where he tells us news of the new disorders of Hogg and his men, in taking out of 30 tons of wine out of a prize of ours, which makes us mad, and that added to the unwillingness of the men to go longer abroad without money, doth lead us to conclude not to keep her abroad any longer, of which I am very glad, for I do not like our doings with what we have already got, Sir William Batten, ordering the disposal of our wines and goods, and he leaves it to Morris the cooper, who I take to be a cunning proud knave, so that I am very desirous to adventure no further. So away by water from the Old Swan to Whitehall, and there to Sir William Coventry's, with whom I stayed a great while longer than I have done these many months, and had opportunity of talking with him. And he doth declare himself troubled that he hath anything left him to do in the navy, and would be glad to part with his whole profits and concernments in it, his pains and care being wholly ineffectual during this lack of money, the expense growing infinite, the service not to be done, and discipline and order not to be kept, only from want of money. I begun to discourse with him the business of Tangier, which by the removal of my Lord Bellis's is now to have a new governor, and did move him that at this season all the business of reforming the garrison might be considered, while nobody was to be offended. and I told him it is plain that we do overspend our revenue, that the place is of no more profit to the king than it was the first day, nor in itself of better credit. No more people of condition willing to live there, nor anything like a place likely to turn his majesty to account, that it hath been hitherto, and for aught I see, likely only to be used as a job to do a kindness to some lord, or he that can get to be governor. Sir William Coventry agreed with me, so as to say that unless the king hath the wealth of the Mogul, he would be a beggar to have his businesses ordered in the manner they now are, that his garrisons must be made places only of convenience to particular persons, that he hath moved the Duke of York in it, and that it was resolved to send no governor thither till there had been commissioners sent to put the garrison in order, so as that he that goes may go with limitations and rules to follow, and not to do as he please, as the rest have hitherto done. That he is not afeard to speak his mind, though to the displeasure of any man, and that I know well enough. But that when it is come, as it is now, that to speak the truth in behalf of the king plainly doth no good, but all things are done by other measures than by what is best for the king, he hath no temptation to be perpetually fighting of battles, it being more easy to him on those terms to suffer things to go on, without giving any man offence, than to have the same thing done, and he contract the displeasure of all the world, as he must do that will be for the king. I did offer him to draw up my thoughts in this matter to present to the Duke of York, which he approved of, and I do think to do it. So, away, and by coach, going home, saw Sir George Carteret going toward Whitehall. So light, and by water, met him, and with him to the king's little chapel, and afterward to see the king heal the king's evil, wherein no pleasure I having seen it before. And then to see him and the Queen and Duke of York, and his wife at dinner in the Queen's lodgings. And so with Sir George Carteret to his lodgings to dinner, where very good company. And after dinner he and I to talk alone how things are managed, and to what ruin we must come if we have not a peace. He did tell me one occasion, how Sir Thomas Allen, which I took for a man of known courage and service on the king's side, was tried for his life in Prince Rupert's fleet in the late times, for cowardice, and condemned to be hanged, and fled to Jersey, where Sir George Carteret received him, not knowing the reason of his coming thither, and that thereupon Prince Rupert wrote to the Queen Mother his dislike of Sir George Carteret's receiving a person that stood condemned, and so Sir George Carteret was forced to bid him betake himself to some other place. This was strange to me. Our commissioners are preparing to go to Breda to the treaty, and do design to be going the next week. So, away by coach home, where there should have been a meeting about Carcass's business, but only my lord and I met, and so broke up, Carcass having only read his answer to his charge, which is well writ, but I think will not prove to his advantage, for I believe him to be a very rogue. So home, and Balty and I to look Mr. Fenn at Sir George Carteret's office in Broad Street, and there missing him, and at the banker's hard by, we home, and I down by water to Deptford Dockyard, and there did a little business, and so home back again, all the way reading a little piece I lately bought, called The Virtuoso, or The Stoic, proposing many things paradoxical to our common opinions, wherein in some places he speaks well, but generally is but a sorry man. So home and to my chamber to enter my two last days' journal, and this, and then to supper and to bed. Blessed be God, I hear that my father is better and better, and will, I hope, live to enjoy some cheerful days more. But it is strange what he writes me, that Mr. Weaver of Huntingdon, who was a lusty, likely, and but a youngish man, should be dead. The 11th of April. Up into the office where we sat all the morning, and which is now rare, he having not been with us twice, I think, these 6 months, Sir George Carteret came to us upon some particular business of his office, and went away again. At noon, I to the change, and there hear by Mr. Hublin, of the loss of a little East Indiaman valued at about £20,000, coming home alone, and safe to within 10 leagues of Scilly, and there snapped by a French caper. Our merchants do much pray for peace, and he tells me that letters are come that the Dutch have stopped the fitting of their great ships and the coming out of a fleet of theirs at 50 sail that was ready to come out. But I doubt the truth of it yet. Thence to Sir George Carteret by his invitation to his office, where my lady was, and dined with him, and very merry, and good people they are when pleased, as any I know. After dinner, I to the office, where busy till evening, and then with Balty to Sir George Carteret's office, and there with Mr. Fenn dispatched the business of Balty's £1,500 he received, for the contingencies of the fleet, whereof he received about £253 in pieces of eight at a goldsmith's there hard by, which did puzzle me, and him to tell, for I could not tell the difference by sight, only by bigness, and that is not always discernible between a whole and half-piece and quarter-piece. Having received this money, I home with Balty and it, and then abroad by coach with my wife, and set her down at her father's, and I to Whitehall, thinking there to have seen the Duchess of Newcastle's coming this night to court, to make a visit to the Queen, the King having been with her yesterday to make her a visit since her coming to town. The whole story of this lady is a romance, and all she doth is romantic. Her footmen in velvet coats, and herself in an antique dress, as they say, and was the other day at her own play, The Humorous Lovers, the most ridiculous thing that ever was wrote, but yet she and her lord mightily pleased with it, and she at the end made her respect to the players from her box and did give them thanks. There is as much expectation of her coming to court, that so many people may come to see her, as if it were the Queen of Sweden. But I lost my labour, for she did not come this night. So, meeting Mr. Brisbane, he took me up to my Lady Jemima's chamber, who is let blood to-day, and so there we sat and talked an hour, I think, very merry and one odd thing or other. And so away, and I took up my wife at her tailor's, whose wife is brought to bed, and my wife must be godmother. And so, with much ado, got a coach to carry us home, it being late. And so to my chamber, having little left to do at my office, my eyes being a little sore by reason of my reading a small printed book the other day, after it was dark. And so to supper and to bed. It comes in my head to set down that there hath been 2 fires in the city, as I'm told for certain, and it is so, within this week. The 12th of April. Up and when ready, I to my office to do a little business, and coming homeward again, saw my door and hatch open, left so by Luce, our cookmaid, which so vexed me, that I did give her a kick in our entry, and offered a blow at her, and was seen doing so by Sir William Penn's footboy, which did vex me to the heart, because I know he will be telling their family of it, though I did put on presently a very pleasant face to that boy, and spoke kindly to him as one without passion, so as it may be he might not think I was angry. But yet I was troubled at it. So away by water to Whitehall, and there did our usual business before the Duke of York. But it fell out that discoursing of matters of money, it rose to a mighty heat, very high words arising between Sir George Carteret and William Coventry. The former, in his passion, saying that the other should have helped things if they were so bad, and the other answered so he would, and things should have been better had he been Treasurer of the Navy. I was mightily troubled at this heat, and it will breed ill blood, I fear. But things are in that bad condition that I do daily expect when we shall all fly in one another's faces, when we shall be reduced everyone to answer for himself. We broke up, and I soon after to Sir George Carteret's chamber, where I find the poor man telling his lady privately, and she weeping. I went into them and did seem, as indeed I was, troubled for this, and did give the best advice I could, which I think did please them, and they do apprehend me their friend, as indeed I am, for I do take the vice-chamberlain for a most honest man. He did assure me that he was not, all expenses and things paid, not clear, in a state £15,000 better than he was when the King came in, and that the King and Lord Chancellor did know that he was worth, with the debt the King owed him, £50,000, I think he said, when the King came into England. I did pacify all I could, and then away by water home, there to write letters and things for the dispatch of Balty away this day to sea. And after dinner he did go, I having given him much good counsel, and I have great hopes that he will make good use of it and be a good man, for I find him willing to take pains and very sober. He being gone, I close at my office all the afternoon, getting off of hand my papers, which by the late holidays and my laziness were grown too many upon my hands, to my great trouble, and therefore at it as late as my eyes would give me leave, and then by water down to Redriff, meaning to meet my wife, who has gone with Mercer, Barker, and the boy, it being most sweet weather, to walk. And I did meet with them, and walked back, and then by the time we got home it was dark, and we stayed singing in the garden till supper was ready, and there with great pleasure. But I tried my girls, Mercer and Barker, singly, one after another, a single song, at dead low ebb, etc., and I do clearly find that as to manner of singing, the latter doth much the better, the other thinking herself, as I do myself, above taking pains for a manner of singing, contenting ourselves with the judgment and goodness of the ear. So to supper, and then parted and to bed. The 13th of April. Up into the office where we sat all the morning, and strange how that false fellow, Commissioner Pett, was eager to have had Carcass's business brought on today, that he might give my Lord Brunker, who hates him, I'm sure, and hath spoke as much against him to the King in my hearing as any man, a cast of his office in pleading for his man Carcass, but I did prevent its being brought on today, and so broke up and I home to dinner. And after dinner, with a little singing with some pleasure, alone with my poor wife, and then to the office, where sat all the afternoon till late at night, and then home to supper and to bed, my eyes troubling me still after candlelight, which troubles me. Wrote to my father, who I am glad to hear is at some ease again, and I long to have him in town that I may see what can be done for him here, for I would fain do all I can that I may have him live and take pleasure in my doing well in the world. This afternoon came Mistress Lowther to me to the office, and there yo did tocar su mamel, and did besar them, and su boca, which she took fort willingly, and perhaps yo posse in time a hacer mas to her. The 14th of April, Lord's Day. Up and to read a little in my new history of Turkey, and so with my wife to church, and then home to dinner, where is little Mitchell, and my pretty Betty, and also Mercer, and very merry, a good dinner of roast beef. After dinner I away to take water at the Tower, and thence to Westminster, where Mistress Martin was not at home, so to Whitehall, and there walked up and down, and among other things visited Sir George Carteret, and much talk with him, who is discontented, as he hath reason, to see how things are like to come all to naught. And it is very much that this resolution of having of country admirals should not come to his ears till I told it him the other day, so that I doubt who manages things. From him to Margaret Church, and there spied Martin, and home with her, who had those, so could have ningungo placer, but fell out to see her expensefulness, having bought Turkey work chairs, etc. By and by, away home, and there took out my wife and the two mercers and two of our maids, Barker and Jane, and over the water to the Jamaica House, where I never was before, and there the girls did run for wagers over the bowling green, and there with much pleasure spent little, and so home. And they home, and I to read with satisfaction in my book of Turkey, and so to bed. The 15th of April. Lay long in bed, and by and by called up by Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, who tells me that my Lord Middleton is for certain chosen governor of Tangier, a man of moderate understanding, not covetous, but a soldier of fortune, and poor. Here comes Mr. Sanchi with an impertinent business to me of a ticket, which I put off. But by and by comes Dr. Child by appointment, and sat with me all the morning, making me basses and inward parts to several songs that I desired of him, to my great content, then dined and then abroad by coach, and I set him down at Hatton Garden, and I to the King's House by chance, where a new play, so full as I never saw it, I forced to stand all the while close to the very door, till I took cold, and many people went away for want of room. The King and Queen and Duke of York and Duchess there, and all the court, and Sir William Coventry. The play called The Change of Crowns, a play of Ned Howard's, the best that I ever saw at that house, being a great play and serious. Only Lacey did act the country gentleman come up to court, who doth abuse the court with all the imaginable wit and plainness about selling of places, and doing everything for money. The play took very much. Thence I to my new booksellers, and there bought Hooker's Policy, the new edition, and Dugdale's History of the Inns of Court, of which there was but a few saved out of the fire, and Playford's new catch-book, that hath a great many new fooleries in it. Then home, a little at the office, and then to supper and to bed, mightily pleased with the new play. The 16th of April. Up into the office where sat all the morning, at noon, home to dinner, and thence in haste to carry my wife to see the new play I saw yesterday, she not knowing it. But there, contrary to expectation, find The Silent Woman. However, in, and there Nip came into the pit. I took her by me, and here we met with Mistress Horsley, the pretty woman, an acquaintance of Mercer's, whose house is burnt. Nip tells me the King was so angry at the liberty taken by Lacey's part to abuse him to his face, that he commanded that they should act no more till Moon went, and got leave for them to act again, but not this play. The King mighty angry, and it was bitter indeed, but very true and witty. I never was more taken with a play than I am with this Silent Woman, as old as it is, and as often as I've seen it. There is more wit in it than goes to 10 new plays. Thence, with my wife and Nip, to Mistress Pierce's, and saw her closet again, and liked her picture. Thence took them all to the Cake House in Southampton Marketplace, where Pierce told us the story how in good earnest the King is offended with the Duke of Richmond marrying, and Mistress Stuart sending the King his jewels again. As she tells it, it is the noblest romance and example of a brave lady that ever I read in my life. Pretty to hear them talk of yesterday's play, and I durst not own to my wife to have seen it. Thence home, and to William Batten, where we have made a bargain for the ending some of the trouble about some of our prizes for £1,400. So home to look on my new books that I've lately bought, and then to supper and to bed. The 17th of April. Up and with the two Sir Williams by coach to the Duke of York, who is come to St. James's, the first time we have attended him there this year. In our way, in Tower Street, we saw Desborough walking on foot, who is now no more a prisoner, and looks well, and just as he used to do heretofore. When we came to the Duke of York's, I was spoke to by Mr. Brunker in behalf of Carcass. Thence by coach to Sir George Carteret's, in London, there to pass some accounts of his, and at it till dinner, and then to work again a little, and then go away, and my wife being sent for by me to the New Exchange, I took her up and there to the King's Playhouse. At the door met with William Joyce in the street, who came to our coach side, but we in haste took no notice of him, for which I was sorry afterward, though I loved not the fellow, yet for his wife's sake. And saw a piece of Rollo, a play I like not much, and much good acting in it. The house very empty. So away home, and I a little to the office, and then to Sir Robert Viner's, and so back and find my wife gone down by water to take a little air, and I to my chamber, and there spent the night in reading my new book, Origines Juridicialis, which pleases me. So to supper and to bed. The 18th of April. Up and to read more in the Origines, and then to the office, where the news is strong that not only the Dutch cannot set out a fleet this year, but that the French will not, and that he hath given that answer to the Dutch ambassador, saying that he is for the King of England's having an honourable peace, which, if true, is the best news we have heard a good while. At the office all the morning, and there pleased with the little pretty Deptford woman I have wished for long, and she hath occasion given her to come again to me. After office, I to the change a little, and then home and to dinner, and then by coach with my wife to the Duke of York's house, and there saw The Wits, a play I formerly loved, and is now corrected and enlarged. But though I like the acting, yet I find not much in the play now. The Duke of York and William Coventry gone to Portsmouth makes me thus to go to plays. So home, and to the office a little, and then home, where I find good groom, and he and I did sing several things over, and tried two or three parts in Playford's new book, my wife pleasing me in singing her part of the things she knew, which is a comfort to my very heart. So he being gone, we to supper and to bed. The 19th of April. Up and to the office all the morning, doing a great deal of business, at noon, to dinner, betimes, and then my wife and I by coach to the Duke's house, calling at Lovett's, where I find my Lady Castlemaine's picture not yet done, which has lain so many months there, which vexes me, but I mean not to trouble them more after this is done. So to the playhouse, where not much company come, which I impute to the heat of the weather, it being very hot. Here we saw Macbeth, which, though I have seen it often, yet it is one of the best plays for a stage, and variety of dancing and music that ever I saw. So, being very much pleased, thence home by coach with young Goodyear and his own sister, who offered us to go in their coach, a good-natured youth, I believe he is, but I fear will mind his pleasures too much. She is pretty, and a modest brown girl. Set us down, so my wife and I into the garden, a fine moonshine evening, and there talking. And among other things, she tells me that she finds by Will Hewer that my people do observe my minding my pleasure more than usual, which I confess and am ashamed of, and so from this day take upon me to leave it till Whitsunday. While we were setting there in the garden comes Mistress Turner to advise about her son, the captain, which I did give her the best advice I could to look out for some land employment for him, a peace being at hand when few ships will be employed, and very many, and those old captains, to be provided for, which she thanked me for. Then to other talk, and among the rest, about Sir William Penn's being to buy Wanstead House of Sir Robert Brooks, but hath put him off again, and left him the other day to pay for a dinner at a tavern, which she says our parishioner, Mistress Holworthy, talks of. And I dare be hanged if ever he could mean to buy that great house, that knows not how to furnish one that is not the tenth part so big. Thence I to my chamber to write a letter, and then to bed, having got a mighty cold in my right ear and side of my throat, and in much trouble with it almost all the night. The 20th of April. Up with much pain in my ear and palate. To the office, out of humour all the morning. At noon, dined, and with my wife to the King's house, but there found the bill torn down and no play acted. And so, being in the humour to see one, went to the Duke of York's house, and there saw The Wits again, which likes me better than it did the other day, having much wit in it. Here met with Rolt, who tells me the reason of no play today at the King's house, that Lacey had been committed to the Porter's Lodge for his acting his part in the late new play, and that being thence released, he came to the King's house and there met with Ned Howard, the poet of the play, who congratulated his release, upon which Lacey cursed him as that it was the fault of his nonsensical play that was the cause of his ill usage. Mr. Howard did give him some reply, to which Lacey answered him that he was more a fool than a poet, upon which Howard did give him a blow on the face with his glove, on which Lacey, having a cane in his hand, did give him a blow over the pate. Here Rolt and others that discoursed of it in the pit this afternoon did wonder that Howard did not run him through, he being too mean a fellow to fight with. But Howard did not do anything but complain to the king of it, so the whole house is silenced, and the gentry seem to rejoice much at it, the house being become too insolent. Here was many fine ladies this afternoon at this house, as I have at any time seen, and so, after the play, I home, and there wrote to my father, and then to walk in the garden with my wife, resolving by the grace of God to see no more plays till Whitsuntide, I having now seen a play every day this week, till I have neglected my business, and that I am ashamed of, being found so much absent. The Duke of York and Sir William Coventry, having been out of town at Portsmouth, did the more embolden me thereto. So home, and having brought home with me from Fenchurch Street 100 of sparrowgrass, cost 18 pence, we had them, and a little bit of salmon, which my wife had a mind to, cost 3 shillings. So to supper, and my pain being somewhat better in my throat, we to bed. The 21st of April. Lord's Day. Up, and John, a hackney coachman, whom of late I have much used, as being formerly Sir William Penn's coachman, coming to me by my direction to see whether I would use him today or no, I took him to our back gate to look upon the ground which is to be let there, where I have a mind to buy enough to build a coach-house and stable, for I have had it much in my thoughts lately that it is not too much for me now, in degree or cost, to keep a coach, but contrarily that I am almost ashamed to be seen in a hackney, and therefore if I can have the conveniency, I will secure the ground at least till peace comes, that I do receive encouragement to keep a coach, or else that I may part with the ground again. The place I like very well, being close by my own house, and so resolved to go about it. And so home and with my wife to church, and then to dinner, Mercer with us, with design to go to Hackney to church in the afternoon. So after dinner she and I sung Se Io Moro, which is one of the best pieces of music, to my thinking, that ever I did hear in my life. Then took coach, and to Hackney Church, where very full, and found much difficulty to get pews, I offering the sexton money, and he could not help me. So my wife and Mercer ventured into a pew, and I into another. A knight and his lady very civil to me when they came, and the like to my wife in hers, being Sir George Viner's, and his lady rich in jewels, but most in beauty, almost the finest woman that ever I saw. That which we went chiefly to see was the young ladies of the schools, whereof there is great store, very pretty, and also the organ, which is handsome, and tunes the psalm, and plays with the people, which is mighty pretty, and makes me mighty earnest to have a pair at our church, I having almost a mind to give them a pair, if they would settle a maintenance on them for it. I'm mightily taken with them. So, church done, we to coach and away to Kingsland and Islington, and there ate and drank at the old house, and so back, it raining a little, which is mighty welcome, it having not rained in many weeks, so that they say it makes the fields just now mighty sweet. So, with great pleasure, home by night. Set Mercer down and I to my chamber, and there read a great deal in Rycott's Turk's book, with great pleasure, and so ate and to bed, my sore throat still troubling me, but not so much. This night I do come to full resolution of diligence for a good while, and I hope God will give me the grace and wisdom to perform it. The 22nd of April. Up pretty betimes, my throat better, and so dressed me, and to Whitehall to see Sir William Coventry, returned from Portsmouth, whom I am almost ashamed to see, for fear he should have been told how often I have been at plays, but it is better to see him at first than afterward. So walked to Old Swan, and drank at Mitchell's, and then to Whitehall, and over the park to St. James's, to William Coventry, where well received, and good discourse. He seems to be sure of a peace, that the King of France doth not intend to set out a fleet, for that he doth design Flanders. Our ambassadors set out this week. Thence I over the park to Sir George Carteret, and after him by coach to my Lord Chancellor's house, the first time I have been therein, and it is very noble and brave pictures of the ancient and present nobility. Never saw better. Thence with him to London, mighty merry in the way, thence home and find the boy out of the house and office, and by comes in, and hath been at Mercer's. I did pay his coat for him. Then to my chamber my wife comes home with linen she hath been buying of. I then to dinner, and then down the river to Greenwich, and the watermen would go no further, so I turned them off, giving them nothing, and walked to Woolwich. There did some business, and met with Captain Cock, and back with him. He tells me our peace is agreed on. We are not to assist the Spaniard against the French for this year, and no restitution, and we are likely to lose Pula Run. I know not whether this be true or not, but I am for peace on any terms. He tells me how the king was vexed the other day for having no paper laid him at the council table as was usual, and that Sir Richard Brown did tell His Majesty he would call the person whose work it was to provide it, who, being come, did tell His Majesty that he was but a poor man, and was out 400 or 500 pounds for it, which was as much as he is worth, and that he cannot provide it any longer without money, having not received a penny since the king's coming in. So the king spoke to my Lord Chamberlain, and many such mementos the king doth nowadays meet withal, enough to make an ingenious man mad. I to Deptford, and there scolded with a master for his ships not being gone, and so home to the office, and did business till my eyes are sore again, and so home to sing and then to bed, my eyes failing me mightily. The 23rd of April, St. George's Day. The feast being kept at Whitehall, out of design, as it is thought, to make the best countenance we can to the Swedes' ambassadors, before their leaving us to go to the treaty abroad, to show some jollity. We sat at the office all the morning. Word is brought me that young Mitchell is come to call my wife to his wife's labour, and she went, and I at the office, full of expectation what to hear from poor Betty Mitchell. This morning much to do with Sir William Warren, all whose applications now are to Lord Brunker, and I am against him now, not professedly, but apparently in discourse, and will be. At noon, home to dinner, where alone, and after dinner to my music papers, and by and by comes in my wife, who gives me the good news that the midwife and she alone have delivered poor Betty of a pretty girl, which I'm mighty glad of, and she in good condition. My wife, as well as I, mightily pleased with it. Then to the office to do things towards the post, and then my wife I set down at her mother's, and I up and down to do business, but did little, and so to Mistress Martin's, and there did hacer what I would con her, and then called my wife and to little Mitchell's, where we saw the little child, which I like mightily, being, I think, very pretty, and asked her how she did, being mightily glad of her doing well, and so home to the office, and then to my chamber, and so to bed. The 24th of April. Up and with Sir William Penn to St. James's, and there the Duke of York was preparing to go to some further ceremonies about the garter, that he could give us no audience. Thence I to Westminster Hall, the first day of the term, and there joyed Mistress Mitchell, who is mightily pleased with my wife's work yesterday. And so away to my barber's about my periwigs, and then to the exchange, there to meet Fenn about some money to be borrowed of the office of the ordnance, to answer a great pinch. So home to dinner, and in the afternoon met by agreement, being carcass, it by Harry Brunker's frighting us into a dispatch of Batten's business. Brunker, Thomas Harvey, John Minnis, William put on, and I, Sir William Penn, keeping out of the way still, wear a great many high words from Brunker, and as many from me and others to him, and to better purpose, for I think we have fortified ourselves to overthrow his man Carcass, and to do no honour to him. We rose with little done but great heat, not to be reconciled, I doubt, and I care not, for I will be on the right side, and that shall keep me. Thence by coach to Sir John Duncombe's lodging in the Pall Mall, in order to the money spoken of in the morning, and there a while sat and discoursed. And I find him that he is a very proper man for business, being very resolute and proud and industrious. He told me what reformation they had made in the office of the ordnance, taking away legs' fees. Have got an order that no treasurer after him shall ever sit at the board, and it is a good one, that no master of the ordnance here shall ever sell a place. He tells me they have not paid any increase of price for anything during this war, but in most have paid less, and at this day have greater stores than they know where to lay if there should be peace, and than ever was any time this war. That they pay every man in course, and have notice of the disposal of every farthing. Every man that they owe money to hath his share of every sum they receive. Never borrowed all this war but £30,000 by the king's express command, but do usually stay until their assignments become payable in their own course, which is the whole mystery that they have had assignments for a fifth part of whatever was assigned to the Navy. They have power of putting out and in of all officers, are beginning upon a building that will cost them £12,000, that they out of their stock of tallies have been forced to help the Treasurer of the Navy at this great pinch, then to talk of news, that he thinks the want of money hath undone the King, for the Parliament will never give the King more money without calling all people to account, nor, as he believes, will ever make war again, but they will manage it themselves, unless, which I proposed, he would visibly become a severer inspector into his own business and accounts, and that would gain upon the Parliament yet, which he confesses and confirms as the only means left to set him upon his legs, but says that it is not in his nature ever to do. He says that he believes but four men, such as he could name, would do the business of both offices, his and ours, and if ever the war were to do again, it should be so, he believes. He told me to my face that I was a very good clerk, and did understand the business and do it very well, and that he would never desire a better. He doth believe that the Parliament, if ever they meet, will offer some alterations to the King, and will turn some of us out. And I protest I think he is in the right, that either they or the King will be advised to some regulation, and therefore I ought to beware, as it is easy for me to keep myself up if I will. He thinks that much of our misfortune hath been for want of an active Lord Treasurer, and that such a man as Sir William Coventry would do the business thoroughly. This talk being over, comes his boy and tells us William Coventry has come in, and so he and I to him, and there told the difficulty of getting this money, and they did play hard upon Sir George Carteret as a man moped and stunned, not knowing which way to turn himself. Sir William Coventry cried that he was disheartened, and I do think that there is much in it. But John Duncombe doth charge him with mighty neglect in the pursuing of his business, and that he doth not look after it himself, but leaves it to Fenn, so that I do perceive they are resolved to shove at bringing the business into a better way of execution, and I think it needs it, that is the truth of it. So I away to Sir George Carteret's lodgings about this money, and contrary to expectation, I find he hath prevailed with Legg on his own bond to lend him £2,000, which I am glad of. But, poor man, he little sees what observations people do make upon his management, and he is not a man fit to be told what one hears. Thence, by water at 10 at night from Westminster Bridge, having kissed little Frank, and so to the Old Swan and walked home by moonshine, and there to my chamber a while, and supper, and to bed. The 25th of April. Received a writ from the Exchequer this morning of this strain for £70,000, which troubled me, though it be but a matter of form. To the office, where sat all the morning. At noon, my wife being to Unthank's christening, I to Sir William Batten's to dinner, where merry, and the rather because we are like to come to some good end in another of our prizes. Thence by coach to Lord Treasurer's, and there being come too soon, I to the New Exchange, but did nothing, and back again, and there find my Lord Brunker and Thomas Harvey, and walked in a room, very merrily discoursing. By and by comes my Lord Ashley, and tells us my Lord Treasurer is ill, and cannot speak with us now. Thence away Sir William Penn and I and Mr. Lewis, who came thither after us, and Mr. Gordon in the last man's coach. Set me down by the poultry, and I to Sir Robert Viner's, and there had my account stated, and took it home to review. So home to the office, and there late writing out something, having been a little at Sir William Batten's to talk, and there vexed to see them give order for hogs going further abroad, and so home, and to bed. The 26th of April. Up and by coach with William Batten and William Penn to Whitehall, and there saw the Duke of Albemarle, who is not well, and doth grow crazy. Thence I to St. James's, there to meet Sir George Carteret, and did, and Lord Berkeley, to get them, as we would have done the Duke of Albemarle, to the meeting of the Lords of Appeal in the business of one of our prizes. With them to the meeting of the Guinea Company, and there stayed, and went with Lord Berkeley. While I was waiting for him in the matted gallery, a young man was most finely working in Indian ink, the great picture of the King and Queen sitting, by Van Dyck, and did it very finely. Thence to Westminster Hall to hear our cause, but did not come before them today, so went down and walked below in the hall, and there met with Ned Pickering, who tells me the ill news of his nephew Gilbert, who is turned a very rogue. And then I took a turn with Mr. Evelyn, with whom walked 2 hours, till almost 1 of the clock, talking of the badness of the government, where nothing but wickedness and wicked men and women command the king. That it is not in his nature to gainsay anything that relates to his pleasures. That much of it arises from the sickliness of our ministers of state, who cannot be about him as the idle companions are, and therefore give way to the young rogues. And then from the negligence of the clergy, that a bishop shall never be seen about him, as the King of France hath always. That the king would fain have some of the same gang to be Lord Treasurer, which would be yet worse, for now some delays are put to the getting gifts of the king, as that whore my Lady Byron, who had been, as he called it, the king's 17th whore abroad, did not leave him till she had got him to give her an order for £4,000 worth of plate to be made for her. But by delays, thanks be to God, she died before she had it. He tells me mighty stories of the King of France, how great a prince he is. He hath made a code to shorten the law. He hath put out all the ancient commanders of castles that would become hereditary. He hath made all the friars subject to the bishops, which before were only subject to Rome, and so were hardly the king's subjects, and that none shall become religious but at such an age, which he thinks will in few years ruin the Pope, and bring France into a patriarchate. He confirmed to me the business of the want of paper at the council table the other day, which, I have observed, Woolley being to have found it, and did, being called, tell the king to his face the reason of it. And Mr. Evelyn tells me that several of the menial servants of the court lack bread, that have not received a farthing wages since the king's coming in. He tells me the King of France hath his mistresses, but laughs at the foolery of our king, that makes his bastards princes, and loses his revenue upon them, and makes his mistresses his masters. And the King of France did never grant Lavalier anything to bestow on others, and gives a little subsistence, but no more, to his bastards. He told me the whole story of Mistress Stuart's going away from court, he knowing her well, and believes her, to her leaving the court, to be as virtuous as any woman in the world, and told me, from a lord that she told it to but yesterday with her own mouth, and a sober man, that when the Duke of Richmond did make love to her, she did ask the king, and he did the like also, and that the king did not deny it, and told this lord that she was come to that pass as to resolve to have married any gentleman of £1,500 a year that would have had her in honour. For it was come to that pass that she could no longer continue at court without prostituting herself to the king, whom she had so long kept off, though he had liberty more than any other had, or he ought to have, as to dalliance. She told this lord that she had reflected upon the occasion she had given the world to think her a bad woman, and that she had no way but to marry and leave the court, rather in this way of discontent than otherwise, that the world might see that she sought not anything but her honour, and that she will never come to live at court, more than when she comes to town, to come to kiss the queen her mistress's hand, and hopes, though she hath little reason to hope, she can please her lord so as to reclaim him, that they may yet live comfortably in the country on his estate. She told this lord that all the jewels she ever had given her at court, or any other presents, more than the king's allowance of £700 per annum out of the privy purse for her clothes, was, at her first coming, the king did give her a necklace of pearl of about £1,100, and afterward, about 7 months since, when the king had hopes to have obtained some courtesy of her, the king did give her some jewels, I have forgot what, and I think a pair of pendants. The Duke of York, being once her valentine, did give her a jewel of about £800, and my Lord Mandeville, her valentine this year, a ring of about £300. And the King of France, who would have had her mother, who he says is one of the most cunning women in the world, to have let her stay in France, saying that he loved her not as a mistress, but as one that he could marry as well as any lady in France, and that if she might stay, for the honour of his court, he would take care she should not repent. but her mother, by command of the Queen Mother, thought rather to bring her into England, and the King of France did give her a jewel, so that Mr. Evelyn believes she may be worth in jewels about £6,000, and that that is all that she hath in the world. And a worthy woman, and in this hath done as great an act of honour as ever was done by woman. That now the Countess Castlemaine doth carry all before her, and among other arguments to prove Mistress Stuart to have been honest to the last, he says that the King's keeping in still with my Lady Castlemaine doth show it, for he never was known to keep two mistresses in his life, and would never have kept to her, had he prevailed anything with Mistress Stuart. She is gone yesterday with her lord to Cobham. He did tell me of the ridiculous humour of our King and Knights of the Garter the other day, who, whereas heretofore their robes were only to be worn during their ceremonies and service, these, as proud of their coats, did wear them all day till night, and then rode into the park with them on. Nay, and he tells me he did see my Lord Oxford and Duke of Monmouth in a hackney coach with two footmen in the park, with their robes on, which is a most scandalous thing, so as all gravity may be said to be lost among us. By and by we discoursed of Sir Thomas Clifford, whom I took for a very rich and learned man, and of the great family of that name. He tells me he is only a man of about 70 pound a year, of little learning, more than the law of a justice of peace, which he knows well, a parson's son, got to be a burgess in a little borough in the west, and here fell into the acquaintance of my Lord Arlington, whose creature he is, and never from him. A man of virtue, and comely, and good parts enough, and hath come into his place with a great grace, though with a great skip over the heads of a great many, as Chichley and Duncombe and some lords that did expect it. By the way, he tells me that of all the great men of England, there is none that endeavours more to raise those that he takes into favour than my Lord Arlington, and that on that score he is much more to be made one's patron than my Lord Chancellor, who never did, nor will, do anything but for money. After having this long discourse, we parted about 1 o'clock, and so away by water home, calling on Mitchell, whose wife and girl is pretty well, and I home and to dinner, and after dinner with Sir William Batten to Whitehall, there to attend the Duke of York before council, where we all met at his closet, and there did the little business we had. And here he did tell us how the King of France is intent upon his design against Flanders, and hath drawn up a remonstrance of the cause of the war, and appointed the 20th of the next month for his rendezvous, and himself to depart for the campaign the 30th, so that this we are in hopes will keep him in employment. Turenne is to be his general. Here was Carcass's business unexpectedly moved by him, but what was done therein appears in my account of his case in writing by itself. Certain news of the Dutch being abroad on our coast with 24 great ships. This done, Sir William Batten and I back again to London, and in the way met my Lady Newcastle going with her coaches and footmen all in velvet, herself, whom I never saw before, as I have heard her often described, for all the town talk is nowadays of her extravagances, with her velvet cap, her hair about her ears, many black patches, because of pimples about her mouth, naked-necked without anything about it, and a black juste au corps. She seemed to me a very comely woman, but I hope to see more of her on May Day. My mind is mightily of late upon a coach. At home to the office, where late, spending all the evening upon entering in longhand our late passages with Carcass for memory's sake, and so home in great pain in my back, by the uneasiness of Sir William Batten's coach driving hard this afternoon over the stones to prevent coming too late. So at night to supper, in great pain, and to bed, where lay in great pain, not able to turn myself all night. The 27th of April. Up with much pain, and to the office, where all the morning, at noon, home to dinner, Will Hewer with us. This noon I got in some coals at 23 shillings per children, a good bargain. I thank God, having not been put to buy a coal all this dear time, that during this war poor people have been forced to give 45 shillings, and 50 shillings, and 3 pounds. In the afternoon, my wife and people busy these late days, and will be for some time making of shirts and smocks, to the office, where late and then home after letters, and so to supper and to bed with much pleasure of mind, after having dispatched business. This afternoon I spent some time walking with Mr. Moore in the garden, among other things discoursing of the condition of my Lord Sandwich's family, which he tells me is in a very bad condition for want of money and management, my lord charging them with bills, and no body nor thing provided to answer them. He did discourse of his hopes of being supplied with £1,900 to answer a present bill from me, but I took no notice of it, nor will do it. It seems Mr. Shepley doubts that his accounts are ill-kept, and everything else in that family out of order, which I am grieved to hear of. The 28th of April. Lord's Day. Lay long, my pain in my back being still great, though not so great as it was. However, up and to church, where a lazy sermon, and then home and to dinner, my wife and I alone, and Barker. After dinner by water, the day being mighty pleasant and the tide serving finely. I up reading in Boyle's Book of Colours, as high as Barn Elms, and there took one turn alone and then back to Putney Church, where I saw the girls of the schools, few of which pretty. And there I came into a pew and met with little James Pierce, which I was much pleased at, the little rogue being very glad to see me, his master, reader to the church. Here was a good sermon and much company, but I sleepy and a little out of order for my hat falling down through a hole underneath the pulpit, which, however, after sermon, by a stick and the help of the clerk, I got up again, and then walked out of the church with the boy, and then left him, promising him to get him a play another time. And so, by water, the tide being with me again, down to Deptford, and there I walked down the yard, Shish and Cox with me, and discoursed about cleaning of the wet dock, and heard, which I had heard before, how when the dock was made, a ship of near 500 tons was there found, a ship supposed of Queen Elizabeth's time, and well wrought, with a great deal of stone shot in her of 18-inch diameter, which was shot then in use. And afterward, meeting with Captain Perryman and Mr. Castle at Halfway Tree, they tell me of stone shot of 36 inches diameter, which they shot out of mortar pieces. Thence walked to Halfway Tree, and there stopped and talked with Mr. Castle and Captain Perryman, and so to Redriff, and took boat again, and so home, and there to write down my journal, and so to supper, and to read, and so to bed. Mightily pleased with my reading Boyle's Book of Colours today, only troubled that some part of it, indeed the greatest part, I am not able to understand for want of study. My wife this night troubled at my leaving her alone so much, and keeping her within doors, which indeed I do not well nor wisely in. The 29th of April. Up, being visited very early by Creed, newly come from Hinchingbrook, who went thither without my knowledge, and I believe only to save his being taxed to the poll bill. I did give him no very good countenance, nor welcome, but took occasion to go forth, and walked, he with me, to St. Dunstan's, and thence I to Sir William Coventry's, where a good while with him, and I think he pretty kind, but that the nature of our present condition affords not matter for either of us to be pleased with anything. We discoursed of Carcass, whose lord, he tells me, doth make complaints that his clerk should be singled out, and my Lord Barclay doth take his part. So he advises we should sum up all we have against him and lay it before the Duke of York, he condemning my Lord Brunker. Thence to Sir George Carteret, and there talked a little while about office business, and thence by coach home, in several places paying my debts, in order to my evening my accounts this month. And thence, by and by, to Whitehall again, to Sir George Carteret, to dinner, where very good company and discourse. And I think it my part to keep in there now more than ordinary, because of the probability of my lord's coming soon home. Our commissioners for the treaty set out this morning betimes down the river. Here I hear that the Duke of Cambridge, the Duke of York's son, is very sick, and my lord treasurer very bad of the stone, and hath been so some days. After dinner, Sir George Carteret and I, alone in his closet an hour or more, talking of my Lord Sandwich's coming home, which the peace being likely to be made here, he expects both for my lord's sake and his own, whose interest he wants. It will be best for him to be at home where he will be well received by the king, he is sure, and his service well accepted, though the business of Spain doth fall by this peace. He tells me my lord Arlington hath done like a gentleman by him in all things. He says if my lord were here, he were the fittest man to be lord treasurer of any man in England, and he thinks it might be compassed, for he confesses that the king's matters suffer through the inability of this man, who is likely to die, and he will propound him to the king. It will remove him from his place at sea, and the king will have a good place to bestow. He says to me that he could wish, when my lord comes, that he would think fit to forbear playing, as a thing below him, and which will lessen him, as it doth my lord St. Albans, in the king's esteem. And, as a great secret, tells me that he hath made a match for my lord Hinchingbroke, to a daughter of my lord Burlington's, where there is great alliance. £10,000 portion, a civil family, and relation to my lord Chancellor, whose son hath married one of the daughters, and that my lord Chancellor doth take it with very great kindness, so that he doth hold himself obliged by it. My lord Sandwich hath referred it to my lord Crewe, Sir George Carteret, and Mr. Montague to end it. My lord Hinchingbroke and the lady know nothing yet of it. It will, I think, be very happy. Very glad of this discourse, I away, mightily pleased with the confidence I have in this family, and so away, took up my wife, who was at her mother's, and so home, where I settled to my chamber about my accounts, both Tangier and private, and up at it till 12 at night with good success, when news is brought me that there is a great fire in Southwark. So we up to the leads, and then I and the boy down to the end of our lane, and there saw it, it seeming pretty great, but nothing to the fire of London, that it made me think little of it. We could at that distance see an engine play, that is, the water go out, it being moonlight. By and by it began to slacken, and then I home and to bed. The 30th of April. Up, and Mr. Madden came to speak with me, whom my people, not knowing, have made to wait long without doors, which vexed me. Then comes Sir John Winter to discourse with me about the Forest of Dean, and then about my Lord Treasurer, and asking me whether, as he had heard, I had not been cut of the stone. I took him to my closet, and there showed it him, of which he took the dimensions and had some discourse of it, and I believe will show my Lord Treasurer it. Thence to the office, where we sat all the morning, but little to do, and then to the change, where for certain I hear, and the newsbook declares, a peace between France and Portugal. Met here with Mr. Pierce, and he tells me the Duke of Cambridge is very ill, and full of spots about his body that Dr. Fraser knows not what to think of it. Then home, and to dinner, and then to the office, where all the afternoon. We met about Sir William Warren's business and accounts, wherein I do rather oppone than forward him, but not in declared terms, for I will not be at enmity with him, but I will not have him find any friendship so good as mine. By and by rose, and by water to Whitehall, and then called my wife at unthanks, and so home, and to my chamber to my accounts, and finished them to my heart's wish and admiration, they being very great and intricate, being let alone for 2 months. But I brought them together all naturally within a few shillings, but to my sorrow, the poll money I paid this month, and mourning, have made me £80 a worse man than at my last balance, so that I am worth now but £6,700, which is yet an infinite mercy to me, for which God make me thankful. So late to supper with a glad heart for the evening of my account so well, and so to bed. May 1667. The First. Up it being a fine day, and after doing a little business in my chamber, I left my wife to go abroad with Will Hewer and his mother in a hackney coach incognito to the park, while I abroad to the excise office first, and there met the cofferer and Sir Stephen Fox about our money matters there, wherein we agreed, and so to discourse of my Lord Treasurer, who was a little better than he was of the stone, having rested a little this night. I there did acquaint them with my knowledge of that disease, which I believe will be told my Lord Treasurer, thence to Westminster, in the way meeting many milkmaids with their garlands upon their pails, dancing with a fiddler before them, and saw pretty Nelly standing at her lodgings door in Drury Lane in her smock sleeves and bodice, looking upon one. She seemed a mighty pretty creature. To the hall, and there walked a while, it being term, and thence home to the Rose, and there had Doll Lane, vener parame, but it was in a lugar mighty ouvert, so as we no poda hacer algo, so parted, and then met again at the Swan, wherefore la misma reason we no pode hacer, but put off to recontrar anon, which I only used as a put-off, and so parted, and to my Lord Crewe's, where I found them at dinner, and among others, Mistress Bocket, which I have not seen a long time, and two little dirty children, and she as idle a prating impertinent woman as ever she was. After dinner my Lord took me alone, walked with me, giving me an account of the meeting of the Commissioners for Accounts, whereof he is one. How some of the gentlemen, Garraway, Littleton, and others, did scruple at their first coming there, being called thither to act as members of Parliament, which they could not do by any authority but that of the Parliament, and therefore desired the King's direction in it, which was sent for by my Lord Bridgewater, who brought answer very short that the King expected they should obey his commission. Then they went on and missed a power to be given them of administering and framing an oath, which they thought they could not do by any power but Act of Parliament. And the whole commission did think fit to have the judge's opinion in it, and so, drawing up their scruple in writing, they all attended the King, who told them he would send to the judges to be answered, and did so, who have, my Lord tells me, met three times about it, not knowing what answer to give to it, and they have met this week, doing nothing but expecting the solution of the judges in this point. My Lord tells me he doth believe this commission will do more hurt than good. It may undo some accounts if these men shall think fit, but it can never clear an accountant, for he must come into the Exchequer for all this. Besides, it is a kind of inquisition that hath seldom, if ever, been granted in England, and he believes it will never besides give any satisfaction to the people or Parliament, but be looked upon as a forced, packed business of the King, especially if these Parliament men that are of it shall not concur with them, which he doubts they will not, and therefore wishes much that the King would lay hold of this fit occasion, and let the commission fall. Then to talk of my Lord Sandwich, whom my Lord Crewe hath a great desire might get to be Lord Treasurer, if the present Lord should die, as it's believed he will in a little time, and thinks he can have no competitor but my Lord Arlington, who, it is given out, desires it. But my Lord thinks it is not so, for that the being secretary doth keep him a greater interest with the King than the other would do, at least doth believe that if my Lord would surrender him his wardrobe place, it would be a temptation to Arlington to assist my Lord in getting the treasurer's. I did object to my Lord that it would be no place of content nor safety, nor honour for my Lord, the state being so indigent as it is, and the King so irregular, and those about him, that my Lord must be forced to part with anything to answer his warrants, and that therefore I do believe the King had rather have a man that may be one of his vicious cabal than a sober man that will mind the public, so that they may sit at cards and dispose of the revenue of the kingdom. This my Lord was moved at, and said he did not indeed know how to answer it, and bid me think of it, and so said he himself would also do. He doth mightily cry out of the bad management of our monies, the King having had so much given him, and yet when the Parliament do find that the King should have £900,000 in his purse, by the best account of issues they have yet seen, yet we should report in the Navy a debt due from the King of £900,000, which I did confess I doubted was true in the first, and knew to be true in the last, and did believe that there were some great miscarriages in it, which he owned to believe also, saying that at this rate it is not in the power of the kingdom to make a war, nor answer the King's wants. Thence away to the King's playhouse, by agreement, met Sir William Penn, and saw Love in a Maze, but a sorry play, only Lacy's clown's part, which he did most admirably indeed, and I am glad to find the rogue at liberty again. Here was but little and that ordinary company. We sat at the upper bench next the boxes, and I find it doth pretty well and hath the advantage of seeing and hearing the great people, which may be pleasant when there is good store. Now was only Prince Rupert and my Lord Lauderdale and my Lord Craven, the naming of whom puts me in mind of my seeing at Sir Robert Viner's 2 or 3 great silver flagons made with inscriptions, as gifts of the king to such and such persons of quality as did stay in town the late great plague, for the keeping things in order in the town, which is a handsome thing. But here was neither Hart, Nell, nor Nip, therefore the play was not likely to please me. Then Sir William Penn and I in his coach, Tyburn way into the park, where a horrid dust and number of coaches without pleasure or order. That which we, and almost all, went for was to see my Lady Newcastle, which we could not, she being followed and crowded upon by coaches all the way she went, that nobody could come near her, only I could see she was in a large black coach, adorned with silver instead of gold, and so with the curtains and everything black and white, and herself in her cap. But other parts I could not make. But that which I did see and wonder at, with reason, was to find Peg Penn in a new coach, with only her husband's pretty sister with her, both patched and very fine, and in much the finest coach in the park, and I think that ever I did see, one or other, for neatness and richness in gold and everything that is noble. My Lady Castlemaine, the King, my Lord St. Albans, nor Mr. Jermyn, have so neat a coach that ever I saw. And, Lord, to have them have this and nothing else that is correspondent is to me one of the most ridiculous sights that ever I did see. Though her present dress was well enough, but to live in the condition they do at home and be abroad in this coach astonishes me. When we had spent half an hour in the park, we went out again weary of the dust and despairing of seeing my Lady Newcastle, and so back the same way into St. John's, thinking to have met my Lady Newcastle before she got home. But we staying by the way to drink, she got home a little before us, so we lost our labours. And then home, where we find the 2 young ladies come home and their patches off, I suppose Sir William Penn doth not allow of them in his sight, and going out of town tonight, though late, to Walthamstow. So to talk a little at Sir William Batten's, and then home to supper, where I find Mistress Hewer and her son, who have been abroad with my wife in the park, and so after supper to read, and then to bed. Sir William Penn did give me an account this afternoon of his design of buying Sir Robert Brooke's fine house at Wanstead, which I so wondered at, and did give him reasons against it, which he allowed of, and told me that he did intend to pull down that house and build a less, and that he should get £1,500 by the old house, and I know not what fooler is, but I will never believe he ever intended to buy it for my part, though he troubled Mr. Gordon to go and look upon it and advise him in it. The 2nd of May. To the office, where all the morning, at noon, home to dinner, and then abroad to my Lord Treasurer's, who continues so ill as not to be troubled with business. So Mr. Gordon and I to my Lord Ashley's, and spoke with him, and then straight home, and there I did much business at the office, and then to my chamber and did the like there, to my great content but to the pain of my eyes, and then to supper and to bed, having a song with my wife with great pleasure, she doing it well. The 3rd of May. Up and with Sir John Minnis, William Batten, and William Penn in the last man's coach to St. James's, and thence up to the Duke of York's chamber, which, as it is now fretted at the top and the chimney-piece made handsome, is one of the noblest and best-proportioned rooms that ever I saw in my life. And, when ready, into his closet and did our business, where, among other things, we have a proposition of Mr. Pierce's for being continued in pay, or something done for him, in reward of his pains as chirurgeon general, for as much as Troutbeck, that was never a doctor before, hath got £200 a year settled on him for nothing but one voyage with the Duke of Albemarle. The Duke of York and the whole company did show most particular kindness to Mr. Pierce, everybody moving for him, and the Duke himself most, that he is likely to be a very great man, I believe. Here also we had another mention of Carcass's business, and we directed to bring in a report of our opinion of his case, which vexes us that such a rogue shall make us so much trouble. Thence I presently to the excise office, and there met the cofferer and Sir Stephen Fox by agreement, and agreed upon a method for our future payments. And then we three to my Lord Treasurer's, who continues still very ill. I had taken my stone with me on purpose, and Sir Philip Warwick carried it in to him to see, but was not in condition to talk with me about it, poor man. So I with them to Westminster by coach, the cofferer telling us odd stories, how he was dealt with by the men of the church at Westminster in taking a lease of them at the king's coming in, and particularly the devilish covetousness of Dr. Busby. Sir Stephen Fox in discourse told him how he is selling some land he hath, which yields him not above 3%, if so much, and turning it into money, which he can put out at 10%, and as times go, if they be like to continue, it is the best way for me to keep money going so, for aught I see. I to Westminster Hall, and there took a turn with my old acquaintance, Mr. Petchell, whose red nose makes me ashamed to be seen with him, though otherwise a good-natured man. So away, I not finding of Mr. Moore, with whom I should have met and spoke about a letter I this day received from him from my Lord Hinchingbroke, wherein he desires me to help him to £1,900, to pay a bill of exchange of his father's, which troubles me much, but I will find some way, if I can, to do it. But not to bring myself in bonds or disbursements for it, whatever comes of it. So home to dinner, where my wife hath cela upon her, and is very ill with them, so forced to go to bed, and I sat by her a good while. Then down to my chamber and made an end of Ricot's History of the Turks, which is a very good book. Then to the office and did some business, and then, my wife being pretty well, by coach to little Mitchell's, and there saw my poor Betty and her little child, which slept so soundly we could hardly wake it in an hour's time without hurting it. And they tell me what I did not know, that a child, as this doth, will hunt and hunt up and down with its mouth, if you touch the cheek of it with your finger's end, for a nipple, and fit its mouth for sucking. But this hath not sucked yet, she having no nipples. Here sat a while, and then my wife and I, it being most curious clear evening after some rain today, took a most excellent tour by coach to Bow, and there drank and back again, and so a little at the office and home, to read a little and to supper and bed, mightily refreshed with this evening's tour, but troubled that it hath hindered my doing some business which I would have done at the office. This day the news is come that the fleet of the Dutch, of about 20 ships, which came upon our coasts upon design to have intercepted our colliers, but by good luck failed, is gone to the Frith, and there lie, perhaps to trouble the Scotch privateers, who have galled them of late very much. It may be more than all our last year's fleet. The 4th of May. Up and to the office where sat all the morning, among other things, a great conflict I had with Sir William Warren, he bringing a letter to the board flatly in words, charging them with their delays in passing his accounts, which have been with them these 2 years, part of which, I said, was not true, and the other undecent. The whole board was concerned to take notice of it as well as myself, but none of them had the honour to do it, but suffered me to do it alone, only Sir William Batten, which did what he did out of common spite to him. So I writ in the margin of the letter, returned as untrue, and by consent of the board did give it him again, and so parted. Home to dinner, and there came a woman whose husband I sent for, one Fisher, about the business of Perkins and Carcass, and I do think by her that I shall find that business as bad as ever it was, and that we shall find Commissioner Pett a rogue, and using foul play in behalf of Carcass. After dinner to the office again, and there late all the afternoon, doing much business, and with great content home, and to supper, and to bed.